Well, in the traditional, the Vedic scriptures called the Shilpa Veds, Vanakam Namaskaram Swami, and the Lord came and gave, like, you know this, I think it was Donatello that did this form of the perfect human. Was that? Leonardo, or Michelangelo. So who was it? Was it Da Vinci? So this, he actually gave the credit to the Vedas, the Shilpa Vedas. This is where he got the perfect anatomy. It's called a tala. So a tala means if everybody puts their pinky and their thumb from their chin to their hairline, this is called a tala. That's your measurement. And then that should go to your, in between your chest and then down to your belly button, down, and it should end perfectly at your toe. And if it doesn't, then you're out of alignment. I don't want to say you're not perfect. But so this is, but this tala mainly goes for the iconography of Vishnu, Krishna. So Krishna came and manifested as the divine architect and everything, and he gave these forms. This is how I'm supposed to be worshipped. This way, that way, measurements, the divine masculine, divine feminine. So within Narsimha, there's certain forms. There's no Prahlad Narsimha. No. Because generally the devotee is not shown with Bhagavan. Generally the devotee is worshipping Bhagavan. So obviously in our tradition we worship the Parampara very seriously. So we have the Parampara on our altars and everything like that. But in the kind of that Vedic, or they call it Sanatan Dharma paradigm, so that's why Prahlad's not there. Because he's generally either worshipped outside, but he's looking at the idol of Narsimha. So some temples, they'll have like a small Prahlad kind of outside, but looking at the main deity. So he people will worship him, but he's there viewing. So yeah, that's why that deity in Samashalam is so unique, actually. And one of a kind, actually, in the world. So the other file didn't work, but this is a cool... This is just kind of random pictures on my journeys and my adventures. Can you guys see? You want to come over here? You're okay? It's clear? Okay. So this form of Narsimha, you look at the top. He's above a famous Shiva temple. And yesterday I was saying Shiva, Hari, Hara, they're the same, one but different. So Narsimha is there, tearing Hiranyakashipu apart, which is so fantastic. And I wish I could zoom, I don't know how to do that, so you could see closer, but anyways, forget it. We'll move on. And you see Garuda is there. You have around him, those round, there's all the Das Avatars. And then you have, above that, you have Indra, you have Agni, you have Vayu, Kuber, all the demigods, the sub-demigods, Narada, the Saptarishis, the four Kumars. And keep in mind, the sculpture is like this big. It's like nothing. So, and this was done over 1,500 years ago. So imagine the darshan these artists were having. They were directly connecting. Like I said before, they would fast. They would do tapasya. And they would get direct visions. And it would go through. I mean, look at what they create. I couldn't do this at all. I can't even draw like a stick figure. But some people have this ability to just bring God out through a painting. Like this nice Mataji. What's her name? Kirtira Nandini. I'm so bad with names. I call her the artist, Narsimha artist. So she made this beautiful painting of Narsimha, and that is her God. It's non-different. The painting, the picture, that's who she worships. So when they come into this temple, he's so high up. It's funny to see a lot of the Indian ladies, some are quite small, you know, they're like jumping up to try to throw a flower to his feet, you know. And, oh, there's a close-up, yeah. And you see to the left, he's stabbing Hiranyakashipu, one of his associates, through the head and the eye. You see that? You see? That's pretty awesome. Because remember, after he killed Hiranyakashipu, he fought with his soldiers. You know? So that's pretty graphic, actually. And then over here, you see how he has a spear through another one. It's like, it's so amazing, actually. And then he's holding the bow. You see the bow? And then you see the intestines. Some of them got broken. He was going like, he wasn't going like this, okay? He was going like this. Like, he's making some pasta or something really amazing. Like, really far out, actually. And then every weapon is there. Sankhan Chakra, Gadma, Padma. Then he has a noose. Like you hang someone. He has a scale, the Dharma scale, right? So, and then you can see the Dasavatar very clearly. Wow, he's awesome. I haven't seen this photo for a long time. And you see the tooth, the teeth, these wild things coming out of him. You see how one of them has four teeth and then one just has the single. Oh, and then the tongue is up. He's relishing. It's like when you eat something good, you lick your lip. It's like, I want to get all the flavor. He's relishing this whole pastime, you know? So far out. Wow. So, just in case you want to get in touch with the artist, there's his number. He had to let everybody know. His name is, and it's called Shilpi. Shilpi. So, he's a follower of the Shilpa Shastras. So, try and say his name. KPR Maya Pamaka Chakri. Good luck. So this is not the original. So this on top is all limestone. A lot of the temples used to be with lime, because after years, the lime becomes becomes stone, and it has a natural glass. It waterproofs itself. So a lot of these are still, they remain perfect, like 1,500, 2,000 years old, but some of the idols within fell apart. During different invasions, the Muslims would come and literally throw a brick, you know, and limestone wasn't so strong before it cured. Here's another one. Yeah, this is in Melkote. So now this is the contemporary. This is all cement. They carved this in cement. And it's a very unique art. Like, it's, they just throw cement up there. They just throw, and then one carver is just carving it. Pouring water, carving, and it's so they took this traditional skill and modernized, made it modern, you know, really interesting. Here's Swamiji. This guy was really cool. So I showed up at this temple called Hangarakate, and I was searching this temple for over 10 years because they don't let anybody in here. They're a little bit... maybe on the racist side. They're not into white people. So that's one of the reasons nobody would tell me. Second is they had some of the oldest deities of Nrsimha ever in the history that are still small bronze ones. So I had assumed it was one deity. I saw a photo of Nrsimha and his hands. He was killing Hiranyakashipu, but he wasn't pulling out. And he had both hands up like this. So, for the kids here, when the parents raise their hand, what does this mean? I'm going to give you one smack. Unless you're, hey, stop it. You know, they don't do it, hey. So this is that, he's doing both hands. He's like, watch out, you know. Before you do it, think twice. And then he has a finger too, he's like this. Like a teacher, and then sometimes he's pointing like this. It's really far out. So this Swamiji, they would never let anyone photograph, but I found an old photo, like 100-year-old photo of this deity. And I was obsessed for years. And right when I gave up, another Swamiji, who was in the same tradition, the Shankara tradition, Shankaracharya initiated 10,008 sannyasis into the Nrsimha Gayatri. There were Nrsimha sannyasis. And then he's to spread his word, you know, Nrsimha Dev's. So he was a huge Nrsimha Dev follower and devotee. So this is one of their muttas. And Swamiji, I didn't know he was there. I just went right to the temple, pulled the cameras out before they were like, no, 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 no. And I was shocked. Luckily, Damodar, my photographer, just got to work and he was like taking the photos. But there was three deities. There was Maha Jwala on the top. In Karnataka, they have these step systems. So they have like deities, deities, deities. And it's generally because of the acharyas. So the first acharya, then maybe then there's like 10 acharyas, deities up top, and then the other 10, and then the present days. So there's three deities, Jwala, Lakshmi, and Ugra. And I was like blown away. And the Brahmin was there. And I never saw the deities. I only saw a photo with his kavacha, the gold thing that goes over the deity. And the Brahmin was in the middle of puja. And he was just about to take the kavachas off. And he was like shocked we were there. I was like, Swami, Swami, darshan, please. Can I see the... And he hesitated for 1 second, but then he just was like, of course. So he took off Ugra Nrisimhadev's kavacha, and my mind was blown when I saw the hands. And the one, he's like this, like this. It's just mind-blowing. And then the other one that was... It was very hard to see because he was so old and so small. I think... I don't know if I have photo... No, I don't. Because this is a random slideshow. But anyways, we had darshan, and they said, you want to meet Swamiji? Swamiji spoke perfect English, and we went up and met him. And he was reading, guess what? No, he was reading Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. So I walked in and he saw me. He was like, whoa. Because he never goes anywhere. They're just there in the mutt, and nobody knows about this mutt, especially white people. And he goes, oh, how can I help you? And I said, you know Prabhupada? I just pointed to the guy. I said, you know Prabhupada? He said, of course, I've read every single one of his books. He is the true devotee, saint. He was started praising Prabhupada, and I was shocked. Because along my way, I met many Swamis that would praise Prabhupada. They would say, oh, your ISKCON, oh, Swami Prabhupada, he was real acharya. You know? So he started praising, and then we walked around the matta, and he just started telling me the pastime of these deities and how many... antique dealers, aka thieves, were trying to rob this temple. Now, this temple in Karnataka, there's still a lot of leopards, black panthers, and the occasional tiger. Big, big cobras. The I don't know if anybody knows this, but the male king cobras don't bother you. They go. But the female king cobras, they chase you till they bite you. And there's no exceptions. God bless. So luckily for me, I always ran into male king cobras. And they're a little different colors, you know. The males tend to be a little more blackish, and the females are like tawny, like reddish black, and sometimes bigger. So this particular area was famous for king cobras, and many people dying. So Swamiji was telling me how just randomly, outside of the ashram, within 100 feet of the ashram, like over the years, like they found like 20 dead bodies, either like eaten, partly eaten, or just totally dead, and just random, and over the years, he would hear from obviously one of their relatives, who told them they were going to steal the idols, that these people were coming to. And now, lately, one very, very wealthy devotee, follower of Shankara, built like a fortress. Like, there's like four walls, and then the gates are like, it's amazing, and it's all traditional. Like, and then he put cameras everywhere, and so they're very much, and they have one of the only Vedic gurukuls remaining in India. And it's run by grihastas. So obviously Swamiji oversees it, but the husband and wife run it. And it's all just Sanskrit. Now these kids, they come in the morning, Mangala, 5 to 7. They do the rituals, and then they go learn, do the Sanskrit mantras, and then they go to school. And then after school, back to the ashram to do seva, cleaning. And then evening mantras, and then they go home. This is the Gurukul system they have. And only few can actually stay in the Gurukul. And it's generally the older boys. And like 12, 15. So yeah, this Swamiji was very kind. So here's another form of Ugranishma. I remember when I was young, I saw photos of this deity, and I was kind of like blown away. But to actually go there, and because I'm tall, I could like touch him. So awesome. You see Garuda at the end, down there. Hiranya is holding a, and if you look at him, Sringadeva's fingers are in Hiranyakashipu's knee. They're inside of him. You see? His nails are like, and then he's holding his hand. He's holding, it's nuts. Let's see if there's a close-up. I don't think so, no. So this is the Hoysala I spoke about earlier, this dynasty. They were all about building the most beautiful, opulent temples of India. Every inch was carved, you know. So, this is a nice... This is Akiripali Narasimha, so Yoga Lakshmi Narasimha. And I don't think I have a... No, bummer. Anyways, it's a unique form where Narasimha is sitting, and he has his hand over Lakshmi, like boyfriend, girlfriend, or like your husband and wife. Your wife's sitting next to you, and you're just arms over her shoulder, and your hands over her. It's the most intimate deity I've ever seen of Narasimha. And this is this temple, Akiripali. And the Brahman, I knew his forefathers, father's father's father, and they all died. And I knew him when he was a kid, when I went there in 1997. He must have been, I think he was 8 or 10 maybe. And he asked me to write something in English. So I wrote on a piece of paper my name, my phone number, you know, and I wrote a little note, always and forever, Jainishma. And when I went back last year to visit him, oh no, it wasn't last year, it was when I was doing the first book, he was now a man with kids, and like, I hadn't seen him for how many years, you know, and maybe 20 years. And he knew it was me, but I didn't recognize him. So after he did this beautiful puja, he comes to me and he says, you know, I want to show you something. And I was excited. Oh, he's going to show me a deity. And he went into this cabinet and he pulled out the piece of paper I gave him from 19. he was like, do you remember? It's in the first book, that story. He was like, do you remember me? And I was like, oh my God, where's your dad? And of course, you know, they all passed away and he's the head. Archika, that was really sweet. Akiripali in Narasimha. And this is a nice form. Because when we were speaking about form yesterday, this is Bhadra Narasimha or Bala Narasimha. And this is unusual because he's holding the sunken chakra below and the Padma and the Gada, which is unusual in the Sringadeva, you know, unless he has all the weapons. In Ugra, he doesn't hold the Padma and Gada in the Shanti forms. But this one is all about just protection. Here are my weapons, and they are here to protect my devotees. So, Bala Bhadra Narasimha. This one, this is a sneaked photo. Maybe, is there another one? No. So you see all the different Narasimhas in the center, on the right, down below, Narasimha Shala over there. So this is in Subramanyamat, and this is a famous place for Visuki, the snake. And there's a cave that goes underground. It's one of the most, takes a lot to scare me, but that was wild. And so they say Visuki still lives, and he's worshipping Narasimha. And this temple, there's a Shila, which I snuck in the temple when it was closed and the Brahmin was doing puja and he pulled it out. And it was the most unique Shila I'd ever seen. And I managed to sneak a couple of photos, which you're not supposed to do. But before the Brahmin realized, they have a Yoga Lakshmi Ram Narasimha on the bottom right. and Lakshmi Narasimha, Lakshmi Narasimha, and then tons of other Narasimhas around, but all of these were from the different swamis of the mutt, Subramanya mutt. And on the way out, it was dark, it was nighttime, and I wanted to go in Vasuki's cave. And it's a hole in the ground, it's like a tunnel, deep, deep cavern. So I had the driver pull over, and this is when I was younger, and I told him, just wait for me. And there was all these signs in the local language, danger, do not enter, do not enter, do not enter. I didn't read the local language, so I just hopped over the fence and went down into the cave with my flashlight. And it was like, the hair-raising goosebumps, like for, it was wild. And there was something in that cave, power, some sort of power that did not want me in there. So I got the picture and got back up and got out of there. That's in Subramanya, yeah, in Karnataka. This is Melkote. I think only, you've been to Melkote? Yes. Nobody else has been there yet. This is famous. It's mentioned in the Puranas, Mahabharata, Ramayana. Pandavas went there. Krishna Rukmini went there. Mahaprabhu went there. Ramanuja Madhva. Srila Prabhupada almost went there. This place is very sacred. Prahlapada, there's five caves where the five Pandavas stayed. And there's a cave underneath here where Prahlad did tapasya and worshipped, or he did penance. He meditated on Narasimha, and Lord Yoga Narasimha appeared to him. Because after Narasimha left, Prahlad continued on with his bhakti. He was given the position of king, but he still kept up with it. So they believe this is one of the places where Nrisimhadeva manifest to him, and he worshipped this shalagram. And then in turn, a king had this deity carved, and then that shalagram was put in the back of the idol. I know, because I went and touched and went behind the idol when I shouldn't have. Yeah, so the steps, the whole entire way up, I think I told you yesterday, these champa trees, the flowers are, and there's a breeze, and it's like, it's phenomenal. And you go up there, and he's kind of in this little cave, and he's one of the most unique. In the early days, I could just go sit in there and touch him and hug him. The Brahmins were not so intense, but then they got robbed a few years ago, some 100 kilos of gold, because through the cave there was a tunnel that went up to Nrisimhadeva's, where he is. They never closed it. So some local thieves knew of this, so they went in the night and they got everything. So yeah, there's another Bhadra Bala Narasimha. Unfortunately, some of these are damaged because of, ooh, wow. Look at him. He's about that big, actually, in real life. And he's up on a ceiling 30 feet high. What is that, 10 meters? 10 meters is 30 feet, yeah. All the way up, and you can't get to him. So when I was doing my first book, I bought this cat, and it's like a very expensive lens, you know, like $15,000 lens. The sports professionals, you see them, like, and I was lying down there with lights and disturbing everybody's peace because he's just so awesome. Look at him. Another ugra, see the intestines are twisted. And this one's unique because some forms of ugra, Hiranyakashipu is looking up and Narasimha is looking at him, and this is that, you see? Narasimha's looking at him, and he's looking at him. In Yoga Narasimha. Beautiful. With little Prahlad and Garuda. Ah, some little Narasimha Bhaktas. Little Brahmin boys. Another nice Narasimha temple. See how Tulsi's always in the front? She's always there. You can tell, and that's how I was able to tell. Like, I go to these temples, if there was a Tulsi plant and she was alive and well and beautiful, I knew there was some good Shakti in this place. Because Tulsi feels energy, as you know. So, in this, every temple in the south was adorned with statues like this of Yoga Narsimha, Ugra Narsimha. Oh, this is cool. I almost got in big trouble for taking this. It was worth it. So over here, he's new. He's new. This guy, though, he's really old. Ugra Narsimha, see him? There's Hiranyakashipu bent, and there's his nails. He's looking down at him, tearing him apart. He's new. This deity is extremely old. Lakshmi Narsimha, this deity as well. It's very rare to get photos like this because a lot of these idols are sought after. They're stolen and sold, you know. There's another one of Ugra. Oh. Ah, yes. This is the, in the morning I was telling you, Sondo Mutt, where they, this deity, the big Narsimha, this is called Bhima Narsimha, and it's believed and written about that Bhima Sen, Arjuna, and Yudhisthira, and Akulanzade's brother worshipped this deity. And now he's worshipped in this jungle where I told you there's no cell phone reception, no plugs to charge cell phones or nothing. yeah, so here's him doing the early morning puja. This Swamiji was very kind. Very kind. And there he is submerged in the sacred Kund. It was far out. They do this once a year, and we were there and able to document and photograph. And over here, hopefully the next photo is this is from the Bhimaniketan Mutt. And he's a fantastic, look at that. Wow. Oh boy. Oh boy. Another beautiful photo of Lakshmi Narsimha. And this is often what I would see if you're on top of a hill or a mountain. You could see a lot of Narsingadev's temples were in areas like this. You know, nothing's around, no one's around. A Garuda Vahana. So on top they would put, here they would put the Utsava of Narsimha. And then the Brahmins would carry him in procession so people could. Beautiful temples. Oh boy. Pilgrims coming and see, putting their hands on. That's why a lot of the statues are worn down. Everybody touches them. Imagine in the Vatican or something, all the people touching the statue. It wouldn't be allowed, but. In India, they do. I'm sorry about this. Another Balabhadra Narsimha. And I think that's it. Yeah, I wish the other photos worked because there were some pretty spectacular photos and things to show you, but I'll just show you this one more time. Let's do this. Because it was so cool. Oh, God. Just so we can, maybe you guys can dream of this temple. Hulalu. Yoga Narsimha. Where are you? Yeah. He's awesome. So I take people there, maybe if you guys are ever in India. I mean, it'll probably stop soon, but you can go there and touch him. You can put your head on his feet. You can massage him. Oh, what was that movie? Oh. This is that movie. When I first took the video, I was like, I don't shake, but I was like, really... Yeah, I was really kind of freaked out. Because look at him, he's completely covered in this mold. God, crazy people. And then the cleaning. Wow. And the boys were so touching him, like they're cleaning, you know, their best friend or something, like, and so nice, my God. So I hope to bring more devotees there to do seva to him. Wow. This is about 4 hours from Bangalore, so it's Karnataka. Yeah, kind of like going west. Yeah. In the middle of nowhere. Yeah, the one on the left. That white kid's in America. He's my kid. Yeah, he's so awesome. Wow. Like, there was nothing like it. Any experience you've had in your life, or any temporary upliftment or pleasure or yummy food or whatever, this is, magnify it like 1,000 times. That's what this was like. This, you know, the transcendental bliss, sometimes you feel it, you're in kirtan, your hair stands on end. It's even more magnified. So yeah, I figured I'd share this before we finish off and see if anyone has any questions. Anybody have anything they'd like to add or share? Or? No, Prabhuji asked if all the temples are abandoned. I would say in my research of 1,400 plus temples, I would say there's a couple, about almost 200 that were abandoned. But now my foundation, the Nrsimha Foundation, has now renovated them and they're being worshipped. So this is probably the last one that, and I haven't pushed it too much because I want to go back and do the puja. Because once you reinstall them, you're not allowed to. Yeah, so. Anybody else? Yeah. Mataji asked if I have some personal experience. I don't. I keep those very close to my heart. Yeah, I mean, I can share that I know for a fact that he has been there for me, you know, as my father and protector. That I know for a fact. Yeah, visions and dreams as I've gotten older, a lot less. You know, I went through marriage and got beat up. So that kind of, you know, things change when the dynamic changes naturally. But my love and faith for him, no, hasn't changed. Even when I was first going through, you know, the situation, I was thinking, God, really? This is what I get after all my dedication? Really? And then I quickly kind of remembered. I had a dream, and my whole dream was Prahlad's suffering and how that kid didn't complain one time. And I'm just going through a little divorce and I'm complaining. I'm not being tortured, poisoned, stabbed, throwing off mountains. My father's not telling me I want to decapitate you. So I was like, okay, I get it. Oh, I won't complain again. So... yeah. You had a question?
I just wanted to share something interesting for the glories of this lady. That actually, like a few minutes ago, the Malas asked me, so what is your favorite like black and I like abstract. And then she was like asking, do you like yoga Nrsimha? Then I was thinking, oh yeah, actually, do you remember this form Dhruva showed from Sachinandan Swami? Which he mentioned that he was thinking with Sachinandan Swami to open a temple in Germany. And then I told her, I think this is the deity I like so much. And then literally a few seconds after that, the picture comes up, and we're just
that's cool.
Awestruck.
That's awesome. Yeah, he's really yeah. You guys will have to come and touch him and worship him before it's too late. Amazing. Maybe. Well, I don't think that'll happen now. Maharaj, he has a lot. He's been very busy, so it's tough. But it could still be. There's a man there, a good friend of mine, Amara. He's a crazy Narsimha guy, so if anybody could deal with it, maybe him. I don't know. We'll see. It's a big responsibility. I have so many huge deities I commissioned in my life. Sometimes I forgot, and I would show up. And they would be like, hey, remember that you ordered this deity 20 years ago? I was like, what? Hundreds and hundreds. Big stone ones, wood ones, bronze. And it was a nice addiction. It's a nice addiction, Narsimha. So I love some homes when I go into them. What's this? There's a girl in upstate New York. She has a huge Narsimha. Marble Narsimha. And I think she found... No, some Hindu couple ordered the deity. And I believe they fell on hard times. So they gave the deity to her. She's a second generation Gurukuli. And she immediately started worshipping and kind of opened like a little temple center. Huge white marble deity. And... that type of stuff has happened a lot. People get just deities show up. Just yesterday I was hearing amazing stories about how deities have come to devotees, and sometimes very big ones, sometimes very small ones. So your desire is there. And I think if we desired as the material stuff we desire, if we had the same desire for him or them, you'd be surprised what comes your way, you know, because our material desires are so like, oh my God, I want to have the best education, I want to have the best wife, the best husband, the best kids, the best schools, the best jobs, the most comfortable house, nicest clothes, nicest handbags, shoes, blah, blah, blah. The list goes on. We have all these nice desires. If we put up some of that percentage into desiring him, my God. Yeah, it's pretty cool what comes your way. As I've seen, meeting thousands of devotees around the world. You don't have to put it all, just a small percentage. So, like little Moksha there, he's like, that's it for him. He's hooked. Yeah. Anything else for me? Yes? Not really. The gopis did call Narsimha. He asked if there's stories where Narsimha kind of exchanged with Radharani or something like that. No, the gopis called Krishna Narsimha Krishna one time. But that's quite rasic. I don't really get into that stuff. But, you know, they were reminded because you have to remember they're coward boys. So they're like 15, 16-year-old kids. And 15, 16-year-old kids like to fight, boys and girls, showing off to each other. So in that vibe, Krishna was like scratching them with his nails. And then the girls were like, wow, Narsimha Krishna, Narsimha Krishna. Are you becoming Narsimha Dev? Calm down. So that's one story. I completely forget the name of the book. I have it written down, but... it's by one of the Goswamis.
What kind of books have you written?
Have I written? Well, I wrote one called Narsimha, The Lost Temples, focusing on some of his unique temples. And then... That was my thesis. And I'm working on my second thesis called Narsimha, The God of Yoga. So it's... it's affiliated with a lot of big... I'm not into academics, because because they can be very atheistic. But this second book is connected with Oxford, it's connected with Cambridge, it's connected with some of the biggest institutions in the world, because they're one of the top research topics in Hinduism or Indian mythology is Narasimha. So they all are helping me with the second book. So the book will have a lot of relevance in the world, not just the spiritual community. So, yeah. Doing the research, maybe 25, 27 years? Yeah. Yeah, long time. Yeah. So, yeah, it's kept me busy. And almost out of trouble. And then, anything else? Hi. Now over 1,400. Yeah. You know, he's in India, he's in Bali, there's also some in Thailand, Nepal, now Germany, America. We want to open one in Switzerland, Australia, so he's going to start going everywhere. You like Narasimha? Is he one of your favorites? Or? Ooh, Hanuman. I'll tell you a story. So Hanuman is a great devotee of Narasimha. There's a temple in Ahobalam called Karanja Narasimha. So Karanja, they believe Hanuman is still living in the world. And he constantly goes different places where, and he's always chanting, Ram, 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 right? You know the story? Oh, you already heard it. Okay, cool. Well, he was sitting there under that tree, the Karanja tree, Ram, Ram, and Narasimha appeared, and he was like, yes. Hanuman said, who are you? I want my Ram. And Narasimha was like, I am Ram. And Hanuman, you know, he was like, nah, sorry, buddy. And then he said, please don't disturb me. And Narasimha came back, and then he said, I am Ram. So he manifests with that bow and the arrow, and then the single hood of Anantasesha and Hanuman. And a lot of the Brahmins in Ahobalam, the older ones, they always used to tell me, Hanuman's there. Hanuman is in Ahobalam. And one day I was in Jwala by myself. I was very young, maybe 18. And I went up. And the nice thing about Jwala is the sun rises and it hits the foot of the deity. And then as the sun rises, it goes up and lights up the whole body and then goes above higher. So I used to like to go watch that and do puja. And these stories of Hanuman, and the Brahmins always telling me, Hanuman's here, this is where he resides. always was in my head, you know. I want to see Hanuman, I want to see Hanuman, Hanuman, Hanuman. So I just felt this feeling. Sometimes maybe you feel someone's watching you, or you're alone. Someone is watching you, but it's a subtle something. Yeah, you're not alone. So I felt very, like, powerful. And I turned, because I was sitting on the side, so I was looking at Narasimha very powerfully as the sun rose. But I felt someone was there watching with me. And I kind of turned, and my mind maybe was playing tricks on me. Because I used to do a lot of fasting. And all I could remember was Hanuman. That image of Hanuman. So it was like an imprint. It was like, poof, in my face, Hanuman. But I don't know if I saw Hanuman, but you know, the mind is very powerful. So, and then I just remember like a tail poof, going to the side of the cliff. And I always thought, was that Hanuman? Ever since I've been, you know, and I always wanted that experience, so I did it many, many, many more times after that. And I never had that experience again. And then the Pujaris, I told them the same thing. I was like, Ramesh, like, Swami. And he said, same. No, only once. I was like, no, but that's not fair. So, yeah, and of course, Hanuman, like Lord Shiva, is at all the temples of Narasimha. So he's there You know, either he's there on the idol or inside the temple, you know, folding, worshipping Narasimha. So, or if Narasimha is, sometimes he's carved in a deity, he'll be holding Narasimha's foot, like him or Garuda or something. So, wow, we have a, thank you for sharing. Tell me.
I saw one homa you made for Shiva. It's on YouTube. I was a little wondering about your meditation at that time. In general, about the relationship. You said it's one and the same.
Yeah.
At the same time, different.
Well, Shiva, and there's the Hari Hara aspect, you know? So a lot of people want to split him and say Shiva's Bhagavan, Vishnu's Bhagavan. But the true Shaivites and the worshippers of Narayan, the Vaishnavas, they don't make a distinction. They, Shiva is Shiva, he is the greatest bhakta, but he is Bhagavan. But he is Bhagavan relishing being a like bhakta, like wanting to see all these pastimes. So I didn't pay much attention in the beginning, but as I delved into it more, as I got older, I started speaking to the Swamis about the relation between Shiva and Narasimha. And many stories came up, like how Shiva, I think I mentioned the other day, he chopped off his son's head, and then he had to go do tapasya for this, you know, sin. He had to become cleansed, even though he's Shiva. Doesn't need to, but still, they follow the guidelines. And while he was doing tapasya, this Yoga Narasimha appeared to him on the bank of the river and ocean, and he worshipped him. And he, Narasimha offered him a boon. What do you want? Anything. He said, I never want to leave you. And then he said, what are you talking about? You've never left me. You're the... Then he opened his third eye and showed him that you're always with me constantly. You're the Rudra. We are one and the same, but, you know, different. I mean, obviously I'm saying what I think they said, but it was clearly something different. But the gist from the Madhvas, Ramanujas, Shankaras, Swamis I've spoken to, some that have unfortunately passed, was the same. It was all that same story of Shiva getting that blessing from Narasimha. And that a Nrisimha temple cannot be built without Shiva being there, because he's like a witness, a protector, and also a great devotee. And other stories like how many Shaivites, big, even Agoris, heavy tantrics I've met along the way, they worship Narasimha first, because Shiva told them first him, and then after you come and approach me, but I'll only accept your offerings after worshipping my Lord Bhagavan. So, and I'll focus on that in the second book, just for, and it'll be a little bit, what do you call that word? It'll cause a bit of a riff, controversy, but you cannot, there is these facts and some of the history. Unfortunately, a lot of it is lost, but I'll focus on a few things. And I can show how every temple, the 1,000-something temples I've seen, without fail, Shiva's there. You know, Hari, Hara. So, and a lot of senior Brahmins will call Shiva that. They'll call him, you know, Bhakta. Bhakta Shiva. You know, like, and some of the newer ones who are a little bit, you know, they want to start their own movement or tradition, then they... even this Gandana, what's it called? The deity, Gandabanu, yeah. This is also a little misconception, kind of made up, but not made up. Shiva didn't kill Narasimha. It's not written in any Purana, Veda, Upanishad, nothing. Of course, the Shaivites have some texts that came way later than that. They... And then what happened is the king of Mysore, He adopted this as his brand. Annapurnutra, he made this his symbol of his kingdom. Because he liked both Narasimha and Shiva. And the king of the Raja of Mysore is still a crazy Narasimha devotee. So from that dynasty, then this whole cult started. You know, Shiva manifested to cool Narasimha. And the craziest things I've heard in my life, he was bigger than Narasimha. He had to cool him down and make him humble, the crazy stuff. And, you know, then they have like one saying from one of their scriptures written, you know, 300 years ago, you know. So the more I delved into the research, I understood this was a particular maybe vision of somebody, but it was misconstrued because Shiva came to protect his devotee Hiranya, but he came not to protect him, he came to have darshan of Narasimha. That was his main, that's what he loves to do. You see how he got in trouble in Rasleela? This is what he does, and this is who he is. And he's so equipoised. Shiva doesn't, all of his devotees are rakshasas, yakshas, pishchalas, criminals, gangsters, killers. Doesn't judge. Not his, he doesn't judge. So he's very merciful, Lord Shiva. And I think sometimes he's there because he's more relatable with a particular nature of those humans. And then also he can purify them to also come to Narayan, Vishnu, Narasimha, you know, Krishna. That's my personal kind of understanding over the years, you know. But then they're always, you know, Shiva, hail, Vishnu. I don't get into any of that. But I know the Swamis, the main ones, I say Narasimha, whether they're Shaivite or whether they're Krishna Bhakta, and they're like, oh no, Narasimha, hey Bhagawan, Bhagavan Paramatma, you know, they start naming off all the Lord's names. There's no Narasimha's this, Narasimha's that, the real ones, you know. But, yeah, is that okay? There'll be more in the book. I'm still waiting to get, there's a lot of professors, serious Sanskrit scholars that have done theses on this that are going to help, so. Yeah, hi. Just my wife. I think one. I can tell you some. I can tell you a wild story. I was always, like I said before, I was always challenging Narasimha. You know, try and take me. You know, or take me. And I was in Ahobalam, and I was warned many times by them. Don't go alone, but I would go alone. And one day I was going up past Mohaloa to Prahaladavarda, where the school is, you know, up in that area. Nice, beautiful walk. And I loved it, you know, when the sun was coming up, nobody was there. And as you're going up, there was this little boulder kind of sticking out, and it was flat. So I used to go there and sit, chant my japa. It was heaven. And this one day I was walking, and I always wore these padukas, you know, these wooden things. And I was walking and I saw that like a branch, some from I don't know where, huge branch was like there on my spot. So I was going to go move it. But then as I got closer, I noticed the branch was moving. And there was no wind. And it was a gigantic king cobra. It was the biggest I'd ever seen. Probably, I would say Prabhupada, maybe more longer. And he was like this wide, like, and his hood, I'll never forget, it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And I froze, but then my shoe moved and a rock went down right onto the spot where he was and hit him. So he just turned around and was staring at me. And then I'd always remembered about the Nagas, because I always worshipped the Nagas, the snakes, because they're our ancestors. So I said, okay. So I immediately just hit the ground. I paid like pranams, obeisances to him. And then I got up and he was still there. And he kind of, I don't know if it was a bow, but he just kind of acknowledged, like, you know, like, what's up? You know, but it was more like a, like that. And then he just turned back around and then he just went down and he went over the hill. And when he was going over the hill, it seemed like forever. Like, I was like, is he gonna, when's it gonna be done? And then he went, I waited for a minute, and then I went down and sat, because I knew he wouldn't come back. But I felt at peace. There was a moment of kind of like, I felt like I disturbed a great person. Because, you know, it said some of these saints take birth in bodies of cobras, cause, especially in India, because nobody will bother you. And that was a pretty interesting experience. Another one when I was walking in a jungle of Malur, North Andhra. This is the place written in the Puranas where all the Ayurvedic herbs grow. So all the devata, the demigods, apsaras would go there for sport and enjoy and drink the water from this perpetual spring, which they call Amrita. And it's the weirdest thing. It's coming out of the ground. And if it's hot out, it's cold. And the water has these like, oh man, psychedelic, like crystally, rainbowy things in it. And I went there for the first time and I was like, they were like, drink it. And they're like, this is, you will, you know, whatever, attain moksha or blah, blah, blah. You know. So I was just thirsty as heck. So I started drinking this stuff. And I'll never forget it. I felt like I was, like you hear this, you're tripping. I was like seeing rainbows and stars. And I started, and I thought they drank it too. I was like, they were just walking like nothing. And I was like, what's going on, man? Maybe I'm tired. Or sometimes if you hit your foot hard, sometimes you'll see stars. You know, like, but I felt like I was floating through the jungle, following them. And then all of a sudden, they jumped. And they were like, you know, snakes, harp. And I remember it was like slow motion. They were like, snake! So I like instinctively jumped. And I landed right on top of the snake, but my legs on either side, my foot on either side, and I looked down. And the snake was like, and I was like, ah. It was the weirdest thing I've ever experienced in my life. Like, it was like a dream. And then all of a sudden, after the snake, when I jumped and got past him, he was like coming to bite me, but I got, everything like sped up. And I was back in with these guys. They were running, I was running, and then we kept running to the temple. And it was weird. Like, I was like, did you see that? Was everything like going slow? I was like a crazy person. And then we finally get to the temple where it's like this cliff, something out of like Indiana Jones, or there's a movie called The Tomb Raider with this lady. It's like all these vines in a temple and like trees growing up. And then there's just this hole like this with a little door. And an old guy came up and he said, he's talking to the Brahmins, and he was like, you know, holding his leg, pressing it, and they're speaking. He said, everything okay? They said, oh, he's the watcher. Him, his father, his father's father, up until the king, like 900 years earlier, they stay here and watch Narsimha. I said, what's happening? He said, a few weeks back he was attacked by a tiger. I was like, what? And he's alive? They were like, he bit into his leg and threw him to the side. And the tiger went into the temple for hours. And the tail was sticking out the door and the guy was there bleeding. And he bandaged himself, didn't hit any arteries, you know. And he just laid there against this pillar. And the tiger's tail was just going flop, like a cat's tail, flop, flop, outside the, he could see the little tip of it. And then, you know, he got up, tiger came out, stood in front of him and just looked at him and then kept going into the jungle. And that was pretty cool. And so, because I wanted to spend the night there, because it was a long walk in the jungle, they refused to let me. And that deity's crazy, Jwala Narsimha. You go inside the cave and he has an effulgence of crystals. So when they offer a lamp, it's like rainbow crystal all the way around. It's the most magnificent thing. And he's huge, like 8 foot tall, and he's holding his weapons. And his body is like skin. If you press it, it's soft. Yeah, again, one of those deities that was made of bone, flesh, and hair, and all this stuff. Very tantric. So the king, he was a famous king in India, a warrior. He challenged Muslims, everybody. He was notorious. He never lost a battle, but his god was Narsimha. And he was up against his worst opponent, and he was outmatched by like 3 times. And he prayed to Narsimha in a dream. And Narsimha said, if you want to win this battle, you must do a vrata. You must leave your home and find me. And with these certain markings, right? So he did, went into the jungle for some weeks by himself, and he found, he was hearing this roaring, and he found this cliff, this wall, and he started hitting, you know, the wall, trying to open the cave. And he opened the cave door, and then a huge roaring sound came out and pushed him away. And he went inside, and this deity was there, Jwala Narsimha. And he worshipped him, and then he went and he defeated his enemy, and he came back. And yeah, that was pretty awesome. Other than that, no. The wild animals were good to me. Other people's different story, but they, I always was, yeah, pushing it more and more, you know. Let's see, big pythons. One day there was a huge, like 16-foot python in the middle of the road, and I refused to let the driver, the Jeep driver, he was like, I'll just run over it. I was like, are you crazy? You can't run over a snake, it's alive. So he, I went and like started pulling the snake, and the snake came back. He was very old though, so he couldn't, but I just pulled him off the road. And the driver was freaking out. That was, you know, because I wanted to get to the temple before sunrise. Ketavaram Narsimha. Yeah, that one's mentioned in the Puranas too. That was. And one temple I went to called Krishnagiri. This is a very spooky place. I showed up there with Damodar again. And he was screaming. He was like, cursed me in every which way possible. So we were driving, going to Ahobalam, and we get to this place, and there's tens and thousands of palm trees everywhere, and every single head of the palm tree was lopped off. It's pretty like eerie feeling, for no reason. It's not like they were farming. Oh, thank you so much. And Damodar immediately was like, thank you. He was like, Dhruva, no. No, man, we're not stopping. I was like, this is weird, Damodar. What's up with this place? So I saw this sign. It's at Krishnagiri. And I wasn't paying attention to much else, just the palm trees that had been hacked down. And I slammed the brakes on, and Damodar's like, it's really weird, Dhruva. I don't like this feeling. I was like, get out of the car, come on. All of a sudden, I was like hearing this voice. It happened to me a lot in my life. Hey, look over here. Hey, psst. Like, it's your, whatever you want to call it, your mind. Some people say super soul, gut, your gut, whatever. So I always then looked over there. So I looked over, in the middle of nowhere, there's an arch, like a, there's pillars, and then a, almost like a little gopuram. And then on the top of it, it's Narsimha. And I was like, are you kidding me? It's happened a lot, you know? So I was surprised, but not. And I said, Dhamma, there's a Narsingadev temple. We're going. Dhruva. Dhruva, no, man. Why? We have to eat breakfast. He was always like harassing me. I don't know what his big deal. We had a banana yesterday, and he's whinging. It was funny. So I said, come on, please. No, it wasn't breakfast. It was, I think it was around 2-3 p.m. We were driving. We were trying to make it to Ahobalam, which I knew we wouldn't make it. I assured him. I told him Ahobalam was like 6 hours, but it was like 14 hours or something. And so I said, let's just check it out. And so we start driving down the road, and I, out of nowhere, there's a guy sitting on a motorcycle, another Muslim dude. And I said, I pull up. I was like, Baya, Narsimha Mandir Kaape, where's the Narsingadev temple? Which direction? Which way do I go? He said, 4 or 5 kilometers ahead, Tarkulamaragi. But then he told me, Damodar doesn't speak or understand Hindi, thank God. He told me, but you have to park at the river, cross the river, and go walk the mountain and go through the jungle 2-3 kilometers. You know, it started getting a little dark. This was the, this was not summer. This was the, when it gets dark at like 5 p.m. So Damodar's like, Dhruva, please, we can't. I said, look, it's just off right up the road. Let's go. So we're driving along the side of this kind of mountain, hill mountain, and there was hardly any trees, just palm trees and huge boulders, stone pieces, you know. And he's like getting more freaked, him and his energy reading brain. And we get to the end where the river is there, and it's dry season, very little water. So I park there, and he's like, where's the temple? I said, it's just up here. It's just up there, man. Get the stuff, let's go. And it was getting dark like this, you know, like where it's hitting that dusk time. And immediately when I stepped out of the car, I knew we were being watched. Because we're driving through a preservation, a wildlife preservation. So I didn't care. Damodar's like, he finally put his foot down. Nyet. Not coming. I said, okay, fine. Give me the camera. Give me the lights. I'll do it myself. And he was like freaking out. And he's like, leave me the phone. I'll call my wife. I was like, nope. I said, just stay in the van. Lock the doors. And then I, you know, he said, why should I lock the doors? I said, well, you don't know what's out there. And I took the camera, took the lights, started walking up the little mountain alone. And immediately when I was walking, boom, boom, crack, crack, on either side of me, something's following me up the mountain. I could see like a silhouette, because it was still a little bit light. Something, you know. I just ignored it, but my hairs were like, even, you know, it was like, and I just ignored it. I refused to give in. I was like, I don't give a darn. I'm going to see this temple. So I got to the top of the little mountain, and I could see a clearing, and I could see a light, but it was definitely 2-3 kilometers. So I was like, oh man, you know, and boom, all of a sudden I hear this big bang. And Damodar is screaming, Dhruva, please, don't be like Prahlad Maharaj. I'm not Prahlad, I don't have this faith. Come back, please. My wife, what about... And then he goes, what about your wife and child? I wasn't thinking about my wife and child. I was thinking about Narsimha. So I'm... But it hit me. I was like, oh, crap. Damodar is really, like, scared. It gave me a little pleasure. I don't know why. But I thought he was just being dramatic, but he was really scared that time, and I could feel it. So I said, oh, okay. Narsingha, like, what do I do? And then just this, go back, came. And immediately, I could hear him, like, screaming, and he got back in the car, the van, and he's screaming. And I start going down the hill. And then the wind starts like really powerful wind, and there's these beasts definitely in the jungle, huge, dum dum, following me on either side. And then as I'm going faster down the hill, they're going faster down the hill. The wind is getting more intense. Damodar's screams are getting more intense. Narsimha, Narsimha, Narsimha. It was like, and then I get right off the path into the riverbed, and it's getting more intense, the sound crashing through the bamboo in the jungle. I get to the car, I get in, and he's crying and screaming, and the car wouldn't start. And I'm starting to feel, what the hell is out there? And I'm like, pff, pff. And then I'm like, okay. But he's going nuts. I was kind of enjoying it. Maybe I was sadistic or something. But then all of a sudden, it goes, pff. It was one of those propane cars. That time I rented it had gas, and then it had, do you have that here? LPG? Yeah, so they were temperamental. So then it goes, pff. And I kid you not, as soon as I put it into drive and drove off, everything just went. The trees stopped shaking, the wind stopped blowing, the crashing, and we drove away. And Damodar, yeah, didn't forgive me for a long time, but yeah, that was really wild that night. And Krishnagiri, and then I found out later there's two Nrisimhadev temples there. So that was a wild experience. I always wondered what was in those woods. But then on the sign, when I drove back there recently, it was elephants, tigers, panthers, and snakes. So it could have been maybe like some baby elephants or something, you know, because it was very big. And I'd had elephants chase us before. When we were at this lion Narsimha temple in the jungle, another one. And this boy kept telling me, we gotta go, we gotta go. And I just was like, didn't want to leave Narsimha. And then they like, poo! You know, you hear them. And then you feel the ground shake when they start crushing through the jungle. And we just, Damodar was already in the car, like a mile ahead of us. And me and this kid were like running like crazy. And I didn't like see them, but I felt them, and I got in the Jeep and just floored it. That was wild. So yeah, the life was always like that. It was a constant Indiana Jones type of thing. Like, it was a real, it's still like it. Up until a couple months ago, it was like that. And now I'm here in Slovenia. So.
And did you then come to Krishnagiri Narsimha during daytime later?
Mm-hmm. I still haven't gone. I haven't gone back. I drove by there, but I didn't have time in the schedule to do it. But this next trip I'll go, because all my research for the second book is done. So now I can just be a devotee instead of a crazy, you know, finding temples and stuff. So I'll probably go there in the next couple of months. Yeah, but I'll go the other way. Apparently there's two ways. There's the mountain way, and then there's you go through the village, and like there's a kind of a road. But hey, it was fun.
Have to inform
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, without Dhamma. Well, the funny thing was, his wife remembered that. She called me when I was on top of the mountain. My phone started ringing. And I just immediately switched it on airplane mode. Oops. And that's what kind of had this voice in my head. Oh my God, like Damodar's wife. I better like go back and see if he's okay. So she, when I wanted him to come for the second book, that's what she said. You remember what you did to me and my husband? I was like, nope. What do you mean? I was like, what did I do? I didn't do anything. Like we had a great adventure. You aged my husband. Came back with gray hairs. Like, well, either you give it to him or Narsimhadev does. So Narsimha gave him gray hairs. I think it's okay. It was funny. She was so angry, and I told Dhamma, I was like, hey, come on, man. Talk her into it, man. Nope. He's like, Dhruva, she's Mexican. No, no chance. I was like, can I give her? Like, he's like, only if she comes. I was like, never. Nope. No way in hell. It was fun. He's like, yeah, don't know. I was like, okay, well. So then I got this other crew, and they didn't have wives. They're all young guys, you know. Like, nobody. They had moms. No, they were, some situations they were pretty scared, but they're young, you know, tough boys. And their mom, they had moms, though. The moms were calling every day, checking in. But, yeah, it was really far out. I mean, I definitely feel blessed. And it almost sometimes thinks that it didn't happen. Like, I'll look at photos. Sometimes I don't look at photos because I'm too busy being in it. But then I'll look at photos and I'm like, that happened? You know, because that's how the life works here. You know, so. Well, the first book is about the adventures. That second book is more academic and factual with some adventures. And then before, hopefully before I die, then I'll do a smaller book with every temple plus kind of my experience going to each and every temple. So that's the hope, yeah. You have a question? She asked me, what is my worst and best memory and where it was? Well, I don't have a worst one. There was nothing, as far as Nrsingadev and the adventures are concerned, there's no, but, you know, yeah, I think everything was the best. It's hard to choose. Like, people often ask me, what's your favorite temple? It's like asking me what my favorite chocolate is. I love chocolate. Like, I love adventure and, you know. So, but I would say this temple up here is one of my favorites, the Hulalu. One temple they wouldn't let me take photos, the Brahmins were quite evil. Yeah, they were evil. Watching, like, I think one of them was watching this show called Jerry Springer. On big TV inside the temple or something, and I was like, and it was one of the very magnificent, it was magnificent, the Nrsingadev temple, very old. And the other two brothers were like on their phones or drinking tea and coffee, and I was so happy to be there, and they didn't care at all. They didn't give a damn. They were just like completely covered by Maya. And I asked for, like, they wouldn't even do puja unless I paid. And that was disappointing. I went back this last time and they had all died from COVID, all three of them. Yeah, all three died from COVID. Yeah. And the kids took over and they're much sweeter, more into the culture. I wasn't sad when I heard it. I was like, oh, sorry. Terrible. But yeah, that was like few times it happened. Same in Ahobalam, they don't let me go in the temple anymore. I used to smash the doors down. I used to, like, there'd be like metal bars, I'd rip them off, throw them. And then the pujari would come, and I'd be like, monkey, monkey, bandar, bandar. Because there's tons of monkeys in Ahobalam. And he'd be like, what? How could a monkey? Now the doors are like heavy. I can't rip them off. But like, you know, it's just, people do let you down sometimes. I've had, but I would say 99.9% was just, yeah, crazy ecstasy, high adventure, like adrenaline, narsima, just potency, wild, and his people. I mean, there's so many stories. I didn't tell many about women, but it's quite late. I'll tell you about Yadgiri Padmanabhan. I met a lot of women, Narsimha Bhaktas, and she's probably, yeah, she's so awesome. So Andhra told me there's no temples in Tamil Nadu, right? No, maybe one. So I didn't believe them at all. So I showed up in, after being lost in Andhra for months, and I showed up in Tamil Nadu in Chennai, and I've never drank coffee or tea, any of this stuff, never tried this, but Maybe you Europeans can relate. I loved hot chocolate. Loved it. Delicious. But I realized as I got older, American hot chocolate's garbage compared to the stuff over here. Swiss or whatever, you know, Belgian. So I kind of, you know, here I am in my little tiny dhoti to my knee and a little chadar. I travel with very little, nothing. I had a kamandalu. And I see this sign. I told the bus driver to stop. It said, American hot chocolate. Cafe coffee day. I was like, stop the bus. I get off and go right into the coffee shop. One hot chocolate. And all the young little posh Indian kids look at me like, the heck is going on here? Who's this hippie? You know, because they're all trying to be Western in their fancy shoes and fake Versace shirts and stuff. But so two girls come up to me and they go, hey man, where are you from? Perfect English, like an American. And I said, I was drinking my chocolate and I like spit up. What? They said, where are you from? What are you doing here? I said, well, I'm getting a hot chocolate. And they were like, no, but like, why are you in India? What are you wearing? I said, well, I'm like searching for Narasimha temples. I just came to Tamil Nadu to find some. So they start speaking Tamil, you know. And they go, you got to come with us. And I was like, I ain't going nowhere. I'm drinking my hot chocolate. And they're like, please, just trust us. Come with us. You have to meet our mother. And I said, does it have something to do with Narasimha? And they said, just come. So I took my chocolate to go, and I go outside, and there's four black cars, two Range Rovers, and three Range Rovers and one Bentley. And nothing unusual in India. There's so much wealth there. So I thought we were going around, and these guys get out with machine guns and they open the doors for the girls. And they're like, oh, come. So I get in the Bentley with them and I'm like, okay, am I being kidnapped here or what? Am I going to be a slave? So they start talking to me along the way. They're sisters. And they go, you know, tell us a little about yourself. Like, what's your deal, man? And I was like, well, I'm doing research on Narasimha. I want to do a book. And, you know, Tamil Nadu, they told me there's no temples. And they started laughing. They're like, who told you that? I said, the people in Andhra. And they're like, oh, those crazy Andhra people. So we drive up to this big old house, and I think it was called T. Nagar. Huge mansion in India. Big, all security guards. And they open the gates, and we pull in. And they say, go. Go see Mom. So guy opens the door and he has his machine gun and he's like walks me to the front door, and as I'm getting closer, I'm hearing ding 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 ding. And he just stops and he's like, you know. So I walk in the house and I see this old lady sitting in front of this altar, same size as this altar, like maybe I don't even know, 1,000 Narasimhadev deities. From top to bottom, huge to small, tiny, gold, silver, crazy. Everything on the spectrum of any fantasy I had of what Narasimhadev altar should be. That was it. And then I was like, and she was offering this lamp and she noticed, she heard me, my breath. And she was like, oh, hello, my son. I've been expecting you. He told me you would come. And I was like, who? What? Come. Vanga. In Tamil, they say, Vanga. Sit next to me. My boy sat next to her, and she goes, offer him a lamp. He's waiting. So I offer the lamp, and then she looks at me in my eyes like this like, awesome. And she goes, so you're here to see him, and I have to take you to him, show you his temples, right? And I was like, Amma, who are you? And then she told me her story. She married a very, very wealthy man. She herself came from wealth. But she had no, whatever, I can't remember, either eggs or ovaries, something. She could not have kids. She went everywhere in the world to try. And her husband also had no seed. They were both cursed. And one day she, before she was worshiping Balaji, she had this, she came before Balaji and she was screaming, "How dare you? What kind of person are you to give me this body and I cannot have children?" She was, "You rascal." You know, she was cursing at God. "What kind of person does this? A sick joke?" And that night she had a dream and Narasimha appeared and said, "You think everything's, you just deserve something without doing something? Tapa? No tapasya?" And by then she was already like 50 years old. She was an older woman. And she said, okay. So she went to Sholingar Narasimha, which is also again mentioned in the Puranas, the Saptarishis did tapasya and yoga Narasimha manifest. And she would walk up every day on her knees, thousands of steps to have darshan of yoga Narasimha. And she ate only once a day, rice with no ghee, oil, salt, pepper, nothing for the month of Kartik. And at the end, and she would sleep at the bottom of the stairs. And this billionaire woman, and her husband was against it, her friends were against it, she did it. The day after the last day of Kartik, he came to her and said, "I will give you two girls on this time, this, you know, this date." And then she fell pregnant with two daughters. So she dedicated her life to Narasimha. And the opulence, still to this day, I've never seen opulence. She would offer kilos and kilos of gold bullion coins. I think she had 1,008 huge. And then she would have these huge guys hold it. And then she would do the water through that. And that would fall on Narasimha. And then silver, then diamonds. And I didn't know she was a huge, like, not even necessarily a guru, but people like considered her like a swamini of Narasimha. And then I spent the night there and she was like, "Come, you sleep in front of, you sleep with him." She said, you might hear him breathing at night. I was very tired at that point. So I was sleeping. And I kid you not, maybe I was delusional or hallucinating. The curtains were going, and I woke up in the morning to do puja with her. And she said, "So, how was your night?" I said, "It was interesting." She said, "You felt him?" And I said, "I felt something." "It was him. He was here. He's with you." She was like, I was flabbergasted. And I was so young, I didn't get this. I had the conviction, but this was like a awesome conviction. So that morning, thousands of people started pouring in to take darshan of her deities and of her. And her daughters were just chilling with me, like, no big deal. I was like, "Your mom's, what's going on with your mom?" They're like, "People, you know, she, her story, and they come and, you know, do puja with her." And I met the chief minister of Tamil Nadu at that time. I met all these huge dignitaries, and I was like, they're just coming to do puja. And then after it was done, she said, "Okay, I'm ready. Let's go see Narasimha." And in Tamil Nadu, they're quite strict about white people Hindu. And some of the temples, they wouldn't let me in, and she went ballistic. So she got on her phone to the minister, to the temple endowment, got on the phone, she's screaming in Tamil. Next thing you know, the Brahmin gets a call, or the head of the temple. She's like, "How dare these people say you cannot see God?" Like, what are they, rakshasas? It was like she was heavy. So she took me to about 10 temples she knew of. I knew there was more, though. Yet Giri Padmanabhan. And I went, after those 10, I went on search of my own. I obviously found like 100 more, plus way more. And then I came back to see her and the girls. I think it was Taruni, something, her daughters. And I saw her one last time, and she told me, all these deities are yours. When I die, they come to you. The last thing she said to me. And obviously, many years went by, I didn't see her. I got married. I got busy. And I didn't have email or, you know, or get her number, nothing. And I came to find out a couple of years ago that she passed away, like quite a while ago, actually. And I tried to figure out who she, you know, it'll come around when I'll meet her daughters probably in the next couple of years or so, but I'll never forget her. Her Narsimha Bhakti was just beyond compare, like to the point of like, yeah, nobody could save her except him. So that was far out. She was just one of the many women I met. So that was in Tamil Nadu, Sholingar. Yeah, that was became her. And in Sholingar, they wouldn't let me close. You know, they were quite adamant of us white people not getting too close. And she was like, gave millions for renovation and stuff, you know. So I came with her, and then all of a sudden, I was allowed in. So it was really nice. Yeah, so anyways, we could go on forever. Is everybody happy? Yeah. I really appreciate your time. So I'll tell you the father one, the Christian guy in Kerala. I never dogged Christianity. Often in devotees that join, they get a little bit fanatic and critical of their past. I don't think it's good. Plus, Prabhupada always used to call Jesus, he used to say how special Jesus was. And when I went to Kerala, of course, Tamil Nadu said there's no temples in Kerala. And I showed up and I went to the church, because in Kerala they have Gopurams, they have a Garuda Stamba with a cross, they have a cross on top of the temple, but then they have Garuda and Hanuman and the Dasavatar, craziest kitchery I've ever seen. So I was so fascinated, and then you go in and they have Mother Mary in a sari with a bindi. Bindi and turmeric and rice. And then little baby Jesus in a dhoti. I was like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my whole life. But it was a beautiful church, so I went in, right? And I was kneeling before Mary, always. I see, you know, her as the mother. And this father came. Oh, my son, how can I help you? Where are you from? Very educated, I could tell, Indian man. And I said, Father, I'm here on a mission. And he said, should we pray? I said, well, first let me tell you my mission. I'm here to find Narsingadev temples in Kerala. Do you know? Because I knew most of these fathers had converted. They're Hindus. Like, his name was Tom something, you know, Ayappa something, Kumaran Rajanan or something, you know. Like, so they took their Christian name, but then they kept the surname. So, and he said, he immediately got on his knees next to me and he said, oh, Narsimha, I know where there's some temples. I can show you, my son. He said, but can we pray before my God, and then we can go pray before yours? I said, of course. And then he, you know, oh, mother, he started doing his whole thing. And I shut my eyes and offered a nice lamp, which wasn't candles, it was a deepa, with a garland. I got the garland on me, off Mother Mary. Weirdest thing ever. And he got up and he said, okay, let's go. And he had an old ambassador car. I love those cars. And we start driving. And he's telling me his history, family history, and why he converted. And he, we got to the first Narasimha temple. We saw about five. Everyone was ecstatic. And all these Hindu priests were shocked. I'm bringing a father into the... But he knew of these temples since he was a boy. And they knew of his family. He knew of their family. You know, they started talking. And at the end of it, he said, these are the temples I know, and I think that's it. And I knew there was more. But I thanked him profusely. And he gave me a big hug, and he said, you know, I have to confess something to you, my son. And I said, what? He said, Narasimha was always my favorite, and he still is. He said, now coming to you with these temples, it's reinvigorated that. About him. It was really far out. So he was very kind. And then I went on my own separate search and found so many temples. Happened like that in all the states, and you know, really good people helped me find his temples and his people. So, and then as this nice person here, Harinamamrita, helped me find all of you. Come to this beautiful community. So you guys are very blessed. It's a really nice vibe here. I've been to a lot of temples, and yeah, there's something special here. So keep it up. I wish you guys a beautiful night. Anybody, any last questions, anything? Tell me.
Can you maybe say something more? It was so interesting when you were speaking about this tantric, like worshipping of Narasimha Dev with like the skin and the bones. All that. And,
it's hard to delve into it because it's very... unless you know the traditions, but basically a particular iconography aspect is earth, fire, water, air, ether. They take those, the five elements, and then bone, hair, skin, blood, and what was the other one? God, there's another one. And then, of course, there's sacred spices and herbs, and turmeric, kumkum, sandalwood, all these other things. So this combination mixed together creates a human, living, breathing deity, which needs no pran pratishta. And only, I believe, I'm not even sure if they're still around, there was only one sect of the Stapatis still alive in the world that did this procedure. Because I've only seen a few deities like this. And they're living, breathing. There's no Abhishek. They can't, you know. It's like he's in almost human form, like they say. And and also on the opposite side, this is in Karnataka, on the Tamil Nadu side, they have in Kanchi, even in Srirangam, even in... similar thing was done, but it was with lime, shaligrams. For the life of me, I can't remember. I can't remember either. The same sort of thing, but it's not considered a living breathing. There was an installation done generally by putting the shaligrams within the center of the idol. And those deities, you don't do abhishek, nothing. You do that of the utsavas. But on Karnataka side, it's extremely tantric, like to the point of, yeah, it's kind of mind-blowing, somewhat scary, because we don't know these traditions, but they're, yeah, so I remember they wouldn't let me take photos of the temple, they wouldn't let me, I couldn't come in without getting permission of, like, all the masters, and everybody was very unique. But then when I saw him, it was kind of mind-blowing. It was like feeling like I was sitting in front of, yeah, like a, and he had no jewelry. They don't put kavachas, nothing. I mean, it was kind of like a dhoti was there, you know. But there was a thread, but it was very unusual. Yeah, I didn't delve too much in it. But again, Narasimha is the foundation of Tantra. Om Krom, right? This is the essence of him. And from Krom comes all the other tantric pathways or gateways. So those who practice Tantra gain their power from Narasimha Krom, and then from that they go Kali, Durga, Bhairavi, different forms of Shiva, right? Yajna Purush, Agni, and the sub ones. So, but the real root is Narasimha, and it's used for good, for healing, for this, for that, for medicine. Ayurveda is also a form of tantra. But, you know, people use it for other things like power, position, manipulation, things like this. So, yeah, is that okay? Yeah, people have to work tomorrow. I really appreciate everybody staying. I'm so grateful to you guys. And I hope you have a beautiful night. And may Lord Nrsingadev bless and protect you all. And I'll see you again soon when I come back. Jai Nrsingadev. Jai Nrsingadev.